last week we started Parshas Bahar, deals with the mitzvah of Shemitah, and we discussed that the purpose is the Shabbos, and therefore the Torah begins. You come into the land, you're going to keep Shemitah, and then the Torah says you're going to work for 6 years. We discussed the 6 days of the week, the 6 years, the 6,000 years, all the various different things that we learned. So the Torah says, So the Torah says that during the year of Shemitah, you're not allowed to plant anything, you're not allowed to work in the field, you're not allowed to do anything.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's not right. I don't like it. Okay? You come in quietly and sit down where there's an empty seat. So the Torah says during the Shemitah year, you can't work, you can't plant the field, even those things that grow, you know, by themselves. So the Torah says it's really free for all, for everybody. There's no ownership in the year of Shemitah. Now the Mefor... What?
Even the landowner could benefit from it?
He can like everybody else. He cannot show any sign of ownership 696 during the year of Shemitah. He can't show any sign of ownership.
Can they eat?
You can eat like everybody else, but not like an owner. Okay? Now he says like this. One of the Mefarshim explain, the Chinuch, right, tell the Mefarshim explain, what is the reason, so to speak, for this mitzvah? So the primary, the simple thing is to show the world, and the Jews should be aware, that it's really God's field. It's not our field. Hashem is allowing us to do it. We have no say in it. That's one thing. And then there's another interesting thing that they add to this, and they said, generally speaking, the landowners were the more wealthy people. They owned the land. Hashem wanted them to have a feeling of what a poor person goes through. So Hashem says, every so often, I want to remind the rich person that you should feel what it means not to own a field. It's a very interesting thing. There's a famous story they tell. There's once a great rabbi is going around collecting for a poor person that didn't even have firewood to make the house warm. So he comes to this rich guy, knocks on his door. The rich man opens the door. He sees the rabbi. He says, "Oh, please come in. It's cold outside. Come in." He says, "No, I want to meet you outside." It was freezing winter in the Russia. He said, "No, rabbi, it's freezing. Come in." He says, "No, I don't want to meet you inside. I want to meet you outside." He says, "Okay, that's what you want." So the rabbi says to him, "There's a poor family that has no money for firewood. I want you to give me money for them." So the rich man said, "Oh, for sure. Here's money." He gives him the money that he asked for. So then the rich man says to the rabbi, "But why did you make me come outside? You could have asked me that in the sitting on the warm couch." So the rabbi said to him, "I wanted you to feel what the poor man's going through. You're going to sit in your house with the warm fire. You're not going to realize what the poor man, the cold that the poor man is going through. I wanted you to feel it, and now you'd understand better why I'm collecting money for him to have heat." So Mefarshim explained the same thing with the Shemitah. Hashem every so often wants the rich man, the landowner, to feel what it means for the poor person that he doesn't plow and he doesn't cultivate the field and he doesn't own a field. So this is what Hashem wants the poor person to feel. Another thing, like he said, to remind us that Hashem created the world in 6 days, rested on the seventh, okay? And he says, another thing they add to this is that when the Jews entered Eretz Yisrael, and this is what it says, Ki Savaya La'aretz, this mitzvah, like we learned, when you come into the land. So, like the first Rashi in Chumash says, the Goyim are going to tell the Jews, "You stole our land. We're here, seven nations of Canaan, and all of a sudden you come and steal our land. You're Ganavim. You're Listematim. You're thieves." So what does Rashi say in the first Rashi of Chumash? Rashi says, "Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, that when the Goyim would come along and say, 'Listematim, you stole our land,' the Jews have a very simple answer. God created the world. He is the boss. He gives it to what he wants, when he wants, how he wants. Until now, God gave you the land. Now God gave us the land. So in other words, when a Jew comes into Eretz Yisrael, Hashem wants the Jew to be aware that they don't own the land. It's really Hashem's land. And the mitzvah is that once every 7 years, that they can't do anything about it. So that's the reasons primarily for the concept of Shemitah. Okay, so I think we're going to start Pasik Ches.
Who is this Rabbi Yitzchak from the first Rashi?
Who is the Rabbi Yitzchak? Some of Farshim say that the reason why Rashi began Chumash with a saying of Rabbi Yitzchak, because Rashi's father's name was Yitzchak. Mm-hmm. Rashi says Rabbi Shlomo Yitzchaki. So not that Rabbi Yitzchak was his father, but he wanted to begin his commentary by mentioning his father's name. So the first Rashi is Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, in the Zikaron for his father. But Rabbi Yitzchak is a medrash. It's not Rashi's father was a diamond merchant. Rashi was a wine merchant. His father was a diamond merchant. In fact, there's the famous story of Rashi's birth.
The ring, the diamond.
The diamond, Okay. It's funny, a lot of these great tzaddikim, even the Rambam, Ramesha ben Maimon, right? Not too much is known about the Rambam's father. There's one place in the entire Rambam, in Hilchas Shechita, the Rambam quotes his father and disagrees with him. I don't remember the legend. Avi made him in a Eisrin, v'ani min a Matirin, or he was a Matirin, and me in a Eisrin. Once in his entire book, he quotes his father and he argues on him. So obviously he was a great person in learning. Anyway, that's parenthetical. So now with the Torah says like this. So we finish with the Din of Shemitah. And again, in Eretz Yisrael, practically speaking, it means you cannot do anything in the field that shows any sign of ownership whatsoever. Okay? Can't plant, cultivate, gather, harvest, nothing. Then the Torah says like this, V'safarta lecha, you should count for yourself, Sheva Shapsis Shonim, 7 groups of 7 years, Sheva Shonim Sheva Pa'am, 7 years, 7 times. V'hoyu lecha yemei Sheva Shapsis Shonim, and the years of the 7 cycles of Shemitah will be Teshev Arboim Shana, 49 years. Oh, by the way, this is this week's Parsha.
Yeah, this week, yeah.
It's about time.
No,
Bahar B'chukai says this week.
That was last week.
It's coming up.
No, we're in Bahar now.
This week,
yes. 696. Are you going to tell the rabbi?
696. Listen, one of the things I'm paid for is to know what Parsha of the Week it is. That's all I get paid for, trust me. So I'm saying, what's interesting that this is this week. Okay, so Torah says like this. You have to count 7 years, 7 times 7 years, and then the Torah says, how much is it? 49 years. I mean, everybody, I think, knows 7 times 7 is 49. You don't need to be a brilliant scholar to know that it's 49 years.
At that time, they multiplied.
Multiplication was all the way back, yes.
Yes.
Also, an interesting thing, by Sfira Sa'emer, in Parshas Emer, that we read last week, the Torah says, Usfartem lochem, mimochr sashabbos. Lochem means plural. Here the Torah says v'safarta l'cha. It doesn't say safarta l'chem. It says l'cha. Single. So the difference is, the Mefarshim say, put it in the halacha aspect of it. By Sfira Sa'emer, there was a chiyuv, an obligation for every Jew to count. Individual counting. That's what it says, v'safarta l'chem, plural. Here v'safarta l'cha, l'cha means bezdin. The concept of yovel was only a counting of Bezdin. And in fact, the Torah says, the mitzvah in Halach, it says, Bezdin every year had to count. Year 1, year 2, year 3, year 4. There are certain times Moshe, there's certain times, besides Sfira Sa'im, you also have to count. But for instance, by a woman and a Zav, there's a din to have to count 7 days, 7 clean days. V'safra lo shivas yomim. By Zav, by Nida, whatever. So it says, over there, there are poskim that say it's better to count verbally, first day, second day, third day. But the halach is, the Torah doesn't mean you have to count verbally. You have to know it's first day, second day, third day. But here, the chiyuv is bezin has to, in the it had to be oral. They had to verbally say it, that there was tradition. Halacha says that they counted yovel actually each year, which year of the yovel it was. Now, let's learn a few psukim and then we'll discuss the yovel, what it's all about. So there's 49 years, okay? So, okay, you know, let's learn the psukim and then we'll discuss all this. Uvashana, Vavarta Shofar Trua B'Chodesh HaShvi. So you have to blow Shofar in the 7th month of the Jubilee year. But also L'Chodesh in the 10th of the month, meaning on Yom Kippur, B'Yom HaKippurim, Taviru Shofar B'Chol Artzichem. You have to blow Shofar in all your land. Like we blow Shofar in Rosh Hashanah, the Torah says you have to blow Shofar Yom Kippur of the Jubilee year, of the Yishnas HaYevil. But again, we'll see all the details in a second. You have to sanctify the 50th year. This is on the Liberty Bell of the United States. Proclaim liberty throughout the land. It's a pasuk in Chumash. It's interesting. They used the pasuk in Chumash when they made America as an independent nation. They made 1776. Proclaim liberty, freedom throughout the land for all its inhabitants. Yevil he ti alochem. It should be yevil. V'shavtem ish alochuzosei. Every person will return back to his ancestral heritage. We'll soon exactly what that means. V'ish al mishpachtei toshuva, and every person returns back to their families. So what happens in Yovel is like this. Besides the fact that Torah is going to say you can't plant, it's mamash like Shemitah. In the Yovel year, starting from Yom Kippur, as we'll soon see from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur, everything was really regular like the years before. When Yom Kippur came, they blew Shofar like we do on Rosh Hashanah. Shofar trua, okay, on Yom Kippur. When that Shofar is sounded, that's when Yovel began. Slaves become free.
Like
a Rosh Hashanah. I'll explain in a second. The slaves go free. The houses go back to the original owners. The land goes back to the original owners. Everything goes back to the way it was before Yovel. When did that happen? On Yom Kippur. Now, the Torah says, Shofar Trua. Okay? Now, the same thing we find, by the way, by Rosh Hashanah, Yom Trua Yielochem. Now, Trua does not really mean blowing. Trua is actually a broken sound. Now, when we blow Shofar and Rosh Hashanah, we blow like this. Tkia, Shvarim, Trua, Tkia, 3 times. Tkia Shvarim Tkia 3 times, Tkia Trua Tkia 3 times. Okay, that's how we blow it. Why do we blow so much? So the Gemara learns out between Rosh Hashanah and from Yovel, with all the psukim together, the Gemara learns like this. You have to blow a Trua. We'll soon see what a Trua means. And you have to blow a long sound before it and a long sound after it. And the Torah uses the word trua 3 times. Okay? So from there the Gemara learns out, what do you need to blow on Shofar and Rosh Hashanah every year? And Yom Kippur of Yovel, you need to blow tkia, trua, tkia 3 times. Because the Torah says 3 times the word trua, means you have to blow 3 truas. And now we learn out from another pasuk that needs to be one long one before, one long one after, which we call tkiya, the long one. So therefore you need to blow tkiya to ruah tkiya. That is the obligation of Rosh Hashanah, that's the obligation on Yovel and Yom Kippur. The only problem is, it says in Halacha like this, because of the Arichos HaGolus, because of the long Golus, people forgot and didn't know what a Trua is. It's one of three options. It's either moaning and groaning, like when a Jew kvetches, you know, when you kvetch, you go, what we call shvarim, or is the definition of a trua a baby crying? How's a baby crying? Right? Okay, I don't have to elaborate on it. Which is trua, which is what we call trua. And another opinion says it's both together. It's the moaning and crying together. So there's three opinions when the Torah says the word trua in halacha. What does the word trua mean? Does it mean moaning? Does it mean crying? Or does it mean both together? The halacha is, because we don't know, and it's a biblical mitzvah, so we do all of them. We do all. Therefore we blow tkiya, shvarim, trua, tkiya three times. Right, in the one before Musaf. We blow tkiya, shvarim, tkiya three times, tkiya, trua, tkiya three times. Right? So now the question is, this again, for both, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur Yovel. So now the question is, okay, we can just blow tkiya, shvarim, trua, tkiya three times, and you got them all. Why do we need to blow tkiya, shvarim, tkiya three times, and tkiya, trua, tkiya three times? Blow tkiya, shvarim, trua, tkiya, and you got them all. So Halacha says, no, that's not going to work. Why? Because the Torah says, before the trua, you need to blow a long one, a tkiya. Right, now, let's, and one right after it. So let's say, shvarim is the real one. So then, when you blew tkiya shvarim, then you made a hefsik with trua. You broke it with a trua between the shvarim and the tkiya. Let's say shvarim is the real one. So then trua would be a separation between the shvarim, what the Torah calls trua, and the second voice. And if trua would be the main one, then the shvarim would be a separation between the first tkiya and what the Torah calls trua. So to make everybody happy, we do them all. The tkiya, shvarim, trua, tkiya three times, tkiya, shvarim, tkiya three times, tkiya, trua, tkiya three times. Because then there's no separation between the Torah, trua, whatever that may be, and the first and last, and there's no separation between any of them.
And this is when you really blow.
That's when we blow on Rosh Hashanah.
Before Musaf.
And that's how we blow Yovel and Yom Kippur. This that we blow today, that we blow at the end of Yom Kippur, Tkiya Gedolah, that's the minig, not halacha. So it's a minig to blow, it's not halacha. It's not a mitzvah to blow. The only mitzvah blowing on Shefer and Yom Kippur is in the year of Yovel.
And do we do that or
no? Nowadays we don't have Yovel. The din of Yovel is only when Reiv B'nai Yisrael, the majority of the Jew, with the Bezdin, the din of Yovel already stopped during the second Beis Hamikdash. During the second Beis Hamikdash, already a lot of Jews left Israel, so they didn't have all the Jews, because we'll soon see from the Psukim later, the Torah says an expression about the people being on the land. When all the Jews are not in Eretz Yisrael, you don't have the din of Yovel. So already in the middle of the second temple, the din of Yovel stopped.
Why did they leave?
Golus began, Jews wanted to leave. You know, Jews are never happy. They always kvetch.
Yeah, they said Midrash and they wanted to leave.
Yep. Yep.
Where'd they go?
They went to Babel, they went to different places. They went to Egypt, they went to Babel, they went to different places.
What?
Yeah, but the Torah says, Only when Kol Yisrael Aleh, only when everybody's living in Israel. That's what the Torah says.
Bedin is there?
Later we'll see.
There should be Bedin also there, huh? There should be Bedin there also, not all Israel.
Right. No, the Torah uses the word Yisrael Aleh. And the Gemara learns it is only when Kol Yisrael Aleh. We'll find the Pasuk soon.
Yeah, the same Pasuk.
Huh? Okay. So what happens during the Yovel year? You blow shofar and v'kidashtem eis shnasa chamishim shana, then pasuk yud. You have to sanctify the 50th year. Okay. By the way, the Gemara Rosh Hashanah says, by the way, an Yom Kippur. You know we have the long Musaf Rosh Hashanah? Yeah. They said that Musaf on Yom Kippur of Yovel.
It's the same.
Yeah, but only once every 50 years. Yeah. And in fact, there's a very interesting machlekes between the Ga'enim. I don't remember offhand exactly the details. I really should check into it again. L'mashul, there was a Shaila, the 70 years between the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash. Did they count Shemitah and Yovel then? There's also machlekes when they counted 7 years, right, and seventh time. So now the 49th year is Shemitah, right? The 50th year is Yovel, right? Does that Yovel year count as the first year of the next Shemitah or not? There's also Machlekes.
Yes.
So in a different Cheshbeinus, if you look in the Luchis, it says, it's a very interesting thing.
No, they didn't tell us
in the Luach,
after Shemitah is going, the first year is counted as the first year or not? We started 51 the first year.
It's Shnaz Beis L'Shemitah L'Dasa Ga'enim U'Kanog Be'eretz Yisrael. There's a whole machlekes between the Ga'enim and the Rishenim and before and after. How you reckon the Yovel years with the Shemitah years, the pearl everybody does today, the Minig and Eretz Yisrael, is like the Ga'enim. So this year would be the second year of Shemitah. But like, there's a whole question, even when you don't count Yovel. Like nowadays we don't have Yovel, right? So how do you count Shemitah? You just keep going.
777.
777. Yeah, but in those days, the 50th year wasn't necessarily counted. So you could be off with Cheshbeinus. It's a big difference because if you have, nowadays there's no Yovel, right? So every 7 years begins again Shemitah. So after seven times, the 50th year is the first year of Shemitah. Huh? The minig in Eretz Yisrael that you don't count Yovel now. No. It's the accepted minig in Eretz Yisrael, that's what's done.
And there when he says it, the second year to the
of Shemitah.
Yeah,
we count Shemitah without counting the Yovel year.
Skipping, we don't count.
We don't count the Yovel year. Yeah, but the question, how do you figure Shemitah?
You don't count.
The Yovel year, is that counted as a year or not?
Yeah, 1 year. You count it, you count it.
Right, I'm saying, it's not... Yeah, every 50 years, you'd be off a year.
Were they allowed to plant?
No, Yovel not. We'll see in a second. Now, there's another interesting thing over here that the Mefarshim point out, the Tzrar Amar points out over here like this. The Torah says, V'safarta lucha, about Yovel, right? Safarta lucha. So, like we said, simply it means Bezdin counts, singular, Bezdin counts, not the Jews. By Sfir Sa'im, it says, Safartam lochem, everybody counts their own, by Bezdin, this is only Bezdin. He says, what is the goal of the Jew? He should count v'safarta lucha. You should count for yourself. What does it mean, count for yourself? A Jew has to count time. We learned already in the past. What is the mitzvah of Sfiras HaEmer? The mitzvah of Sfiras HaEmer is one thing: count time. Counting time. It's a unique mitzvah. You don't do anything. You just count days. Okay? So it says, David HaMelech says in Tillim also, Limneis Yomeinu Kein Heida. David HaMelech says in Tillim, Hashem, please teach us. What are you looking for? Hashem says to David HaMelech, David HaMelech says to Hashem, please teach me how to count days. Now, something you count is very precious. That's why people always count money. The Gemara says, Adam Mamashmish Bekisa B'chol Shah, a person counts his money always, because something you like, you really count. What is the mitzvah of counting time? That every minute should be precious. So the Torah is saying, this is the way they learn over here. V'safarta l'cha, it says, you have to count for your own benefit. The counting should be for your benefit to do Torah mitzvahs, not to waste time. In other words, it has to be a day which is counted for the person. In fact, in the recent Hayom Yom, that brings down, Chassidim, we always used to count. Every minute was precious. That every, like the expression goes, a winter night and a summer day is a year. You have a long night and a long day, that like, you can accomplish a year's work. So the concept is, a person should actually count. Okay? And he says, a person, he brings up from another great Pelosh Tzaddik, that a person that doesn't have an hour a day to meditate on their, where they're up to in life, you know, where they're at in life and serving Hashem, is not a true person. You could be, like he says, you can be a millionaire in money, but you can never have enough time. As the expression goes, you need to make time. You don't have time. Time needs to be made precious. And that's the concept of the Safarta Lucha. In addition to the fact that we learned, Safarta means count, it also means Sapir, to shine. The days have to shine. The Safarta Lucha, the person should shine with time, to utilize time to the fullest. Okay, then, seven times. Okay, now, Rashi says an interesting thing, that what happens, why does the Torah say 49 years? It says like this, even if the Jews didn't keep Shemitah, because they didn't keep Shemitah, like it's brought down, Rashi says, the Jews didn't keep 70 Shemitahs, and they were punished of 70 years between the first and second temple, as a punishment for not keeping the 70 sabbatical years. So the Torah says you count seven Shemitahs, right? If the Torah stopped there, somebody would think, okay, what happens if the Jews didn't keep Shemitah? Then you don't have Yovel. So the Torah says, no, you count 49 years anyway. We ask, why does the Torah repeat itself? The Torah says you count seven times seven, so why is the Torah repeating itself to say 49 years? The answer is, the Mefarshim Rashi says, from the Medrash, that even if the person didn't keep Shemitah, the Jews just didn't keep it, you still have the din of Yovel. You still have to keep the 50th year. Bezin still has to keep the 50th year. Okay, then it says, you proclaim, what's like we said, liberty throughout the land. That means like this, every slave goes out free. Which means, what happens, you know, Yiddish slave works for 6 years. What happens if he was sold 3 years before Yovel? Yovel comes, he goes out free. What happens if a slave after 6 years said, I want to stay longer? You know, you pierce his ear, you bore a hole in his ear. He also goes out Yovel.
If he doesn't want to go?
He has to go.
Yeah?
Yeah. He's not...
No choice.
Nope.
His wife goes with him?
That shiksa the stays by the master.
Oh,
that's the no. The shiksa stays. Only the Jewish slaves go free. The Gaisha slaves don't go free during Yovel. That's ad elam. I mean, forever.
Yeah,
The Goyisha slaves don't go out free in Yevil, only the Jewish slaves. Now, the question is, the Mefarshim say like this. So why is it liberty l'chol yeshveha? It's only for the slaves. The Torah says, proclaim liberty d'orar ba'aret l'chol yeshveha. Not everybody was slaves. It was freedom for the slaves. But why does the Torah say it's freedom for everybody? So they say that a person, in order to appreciate freedom, must appreciate, value the freedom of others just as he values his own. In other words, when an owner frees his slaves, he understands what freedom really is. Then he can appreciate, like we said before, when you're outside in the cold, you can appreciate, it's like, they used to complain, you know, in the yeshivas. Yeshivas are known for not giving the best food to the bachrim. I mean, wherever you go, they're known. So,
Not enough.
So, they say, you know, sometimes who's in charge of the kitchen? They have a skinny guy in charge of a kitchen who doesn't eat. So he doesn't understand eating. They said for a bachrim in yeshiva to run the kitchen, you need a big fat guy who understands what eating is all about. And then he'll give the bachrim what to eat. It's like a guy when he's out in the cold appreciates what it means to be warm. Or when you have a slave, you appreciate what freedom is. So he says though, Bnei Yeshua says that in order to appreciate freedom yourself, you need to understand the way it is by others. And then it's l'chol yeshveh, it's actually freedom for everybody. Now, what does yovel mean? Okay? What is the word yovel? Okay, in English it's called jubilee year. Okay, but what does yovel mean? So I have two opinions, Rashi and Ramban. Rashi says, yovel, they quote psukim for each one of these, yovel means shofar blowing. There's a pasuk that says, by Matan Torah, b'mshech ha-yovel, heme yalu bahar. When the shofar stops, they can go back up to Har Sinai. So yovel means blowing shofar. That's what Rashi says. The Ramban learns, yovel, he also quotes a pasuk, it means movement. Because in the year of yovel, everybody moves around. People go back to their freedom, owners go back, and so on. So what happens in Israel is as follows. There is no such thing as selling permanent in Israel. You sold everything based on how many years left to yovel.
Unless it goes to Kohanim.
Yeah, but that's very few exceptions. But we'll see. That's mamish exceptions. But normally, when you sell a field to somebody, or you sell a house, it's lease option, really. The price is based how many years left to Yovel. Because when Yovel comes, it goes back to the original owner anyway. So there's no selling permanency. And one of the reasons the Rishonim write, why did Hashem make this mitzvah? Again, to show that the land is Hashem's, the way He divided it up for the Shvatim. That's why there was a big problem at the end of Parshas Maaseh. Got a whole book to get there. The end of Bamidbar with Bnei Selofchad. Right? What happened with Bnei Selofchad? There are five daughters at Selofchad. He had no sons. So they came to Moshe Rabbeinu and they said, "Hey, what's with our father's inheritance?" So Moshe Rabbeinu said, let me ask Hashem. Hashem told him, no sons, girls inherit. Okay? So the girls inherited. Came, and which shevet did they belong to? Menashe. They belonged to Menashe. So what happens? The head of Menashe came and said, 1 minute, we're going to have a big problem here. These girls are going to marry guys from a different tribe. Right? So let's say these girls are going to marry somebody from Reuven. So the son, their son, is going to belong to Reuven. So our land is going to go from Menashe to Reuven. Or to Shimon, or to Yehuda, or whatever it is. They said, we're going to lose land. The Shevet is going to lose Selofchad's property. So what did Hashem say? That year was an exception, one-time deal. Hashem said, Selofchad's daughters can marry whoever they want. It got to be from their tribe. You have to marry from Menashe. That the Nachala should stay within the Shevet. But that was only the first time because that was a permanent division. Now, what do you do? Again, guy marries, a girl gets married. Let's say guy had no sons. Daughters inherit the field. The husband is going to be a different shevet. Doesn't matter, because Yevil is going to go back anyway. Yevil is going to take everything back to the original owner.
How does the original owner not exist? How can the original exist?
So it goes to that tribe's heirs of that tribe. So they got brothers. It goes back to the shevet.
It's not right.
It's not right.
Go back to the original owner. So
the whole land stays, but based on the way Hashem divided the land to the 12 tribes.
Only in time of Mashiach, we're gonna...
Yeah, then we'll figure out where we belong. If we belong, where we belong, if they'll let us in. Okay, everything was sold between one Yevil and the next Yevil. It's going to go back. Okay? Now, therefore, everything goes back to Achuza. Okay? What does it mean, Achuza? The Radak explains an interesting concept over here. What does it mean? It says, Ishal Achuza say. He says, the word Achuza means to grasp. To Ochei something in Hebrew means to grasp. One who owns land possesses it, but it possesses him as well. Because you have a certain liking to the land that you were brought up on. But this is the mitzvah of Yevil. Slaves go free, houses go back, land goes back. You can imagine, in the year of Yevil, there's a massive transformation of people moving all over the place. Which the Raman says, that's why it's called Yevil. Yevil means to move around.
Can one release or re-rent that place?
Yeah, after Yevil, you can re-rent it until the next Yevil.
Yevil has to be finished, right?
Yevil has to be finished.
Right. This is the lease, 99 years lease, because that's the reason?
Where, in Hong Kong?
Yeah. If they get some property, they do 99
years. Only the cities do that.
No, in Israel, only some properties also are leased for 99 years.
Hong Kong was also leased for the, no, it's backed by the Chinese. Yeah. I mean, what's the difference?
It's only by...
You can leave, you can do whatever you want. You can't uproot the Torah law of Yevil, though. You can't sell the land on the condition that Yevil doesn't take effect. Because there's a rule in the Gemara, Masna amashikosev b'Torah tnoi botel. The Gemara says, if you make a condition against the Torah, not in monetary issues. In monetary issues, you could. But in other things, if you make a condition against the Torah, your condition is worthless, because you can't go against the condition that the Torah says they have to do. Can't do it. So if a guy makes a condition, and the condition Yevil doesn't take back the field, it's worthless. Doesn't go.
Pardon?
Yeah.
The time of Yevil, was it a chag? Was it yesta or something?
Did they do celebrate? No, it was like Shemitah. What did they do during Shemitah? This is a double Shemitah. 49th year was Shemitah, and the 50th year was Shemitah. That's why, like we learned last time, we mentioned it last time, that sometimes the field had to produce for 3 years. Sometimes the field had to produce for 4 years. The sixth year, right, the produce of the sixth year, and a regular Shemitah, had to be enough for the sixth year, because it was the food of that year, right? It had to be enough for the sixth year. Shemitah you didn't plant, so it had to be for the seventh. When did you start planting? At the beginning of the eighth. When did it grow? At the end of the eighth. Okay? So 3 years. It had to be enough for the sixth year, seventh year, and eighth year. Sometimes Rashi says it's 4 years. When Yevil happens, so you have Shemitah, so you have the sixth year, well, the 48th year, the 48th year, right? Which is the 60 of that cycle, had to be enough for 48, 49 with the Shemitah, 50th for Yevil, 51st you started planting, had to be enough for 4 years.
So what did they do for 4 years?
They had enough food for 4 years in that year. What did they do for 4 years? No, the 6th year they worked, the 8th year they worked. They only didn't work the 7th year in the field. By Yovel, they didn't work the 49th year and the 50th year. What did they do? They were supposed to learn. What do people do on Shabbos?
Sleep.
Ask a question. What do people do on Shabbos? Yeah, but like, what do you do that one day? Whatever you do on Shabbos, you did for 365 days. 354 days.
It's very hard. But we spend a lot of time eating.
So what do you think they ate? Yovel represents the number 50 in Torah. Okay, let's... I hate using the expression kill time, especially when we just said about using time. The concept of 50 in Yiddishkeit represents a very lofty level that is so great, it's as a gift from above. Okay? Starting from the concept of Sfiras HaOmer. Okay? Sometimes the Torah says, by Sfiras HaOmer, you count Sheva Shapsis Shonim. Right? You count Sheva Shabbosis Tmimis Tiyano. You count 7 complete weeks. Another Pasuk says, Tisperu Chamishim Yeim. You count 50 days. Right? So the Gemara asked, do you count 49 or do you count 50? One Pasuk says you count 7 weeks, that's 49. Another Pasuk says Tisperu Chamishim Yeim is 50. So which one do you? Do you count 49 or you count 50? So the Gemara answers, it's like we find this many times. For instance, by Malkus, by Lashes, the Torah says, Arboim Yakenu, 40. But we know we only give 39. So the Gemara says, the Torah means is, you do it until 40, until 50. Meaning, 49 or 39 Lashes or 49 days of this. That's the Gemara's answer. According to Kabbalah and Chassidus, 49 refers to the level a person could reach on their own. 50 represents the revelation from above. That means, after a Jew worked with all 49 levels, he reaches the 50th as a gift from above. We find this in a number of places. The Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, it's a very famous Gemara, by Moshe Rabbeinu it says, Vatechasreyu ma'at melukim. He was missing a little bit from God. That's what the pasuk says in Tillim. Vatechasreyu ma'at melukim. So Gemara Rosh Hashanah says, Chamishim sharei bina nivra ba'olam. 50 levels of bina, of understanding of godliness, was created in the world. Kulam nitnu l'meisha chaser achas. It was all given to Meisha minus one. So Moshe Rabbeinu reached 49th level. Then the Gemara continues in Rosh Hashanah and says that when did Moshe Rabbeinu reach the 50th level? When he died. And that's what the Gemara says. This is Gemara. The Gemara says, where was Moshe Rabbeinu buried? Har Nevoi. The end of Chumash says he was buried in Har Nevo. Nevo is Nun Bo. So the Gemara says, the mountain that Moshe Rabbeinu was buried in is called Nevoi, because Nun Boi, the 50th level of Alokus, Moshe Rabbeinu reached when he left the body. Which means, so to speak, in the body, you can only reach 49 levels. The 50th level, Moshe Rabbeinu received as a gift from above after he passed away. The same thing it says about Sfiras HaOmer, or for that matter, Yovel, which is the same concept as Sfiras HaOmer, you count 7 weeks. Now, what does it mean, counting the 7 weeks? You have the 7 midot, 7 emotional attributes. Each one is composed of 7, like we do by Sfiras HaOmer, which altogether is 49. By Sfiras HaOmer, we find the Omer that we're counting from, Sfiras HaOmer, was brought from barley. Okay, this is all for the cholent eaters. The Gemara says, Chitam Michael Adam, Sa'erim Michael Behema. This is what the Gemara says. Chita wheat is human food, Sa'erim barley is Behema food. Behemas eat barley. So whenever you be a yeet cholent with barley in it, you should know what you're eating. Now, normally, chita is better than se'ira. Right? Barley is not as good as wheat. Wheat is better than barley. In the pasuk, it comes first, chito, se'ira, right? So chito is better than se'ira. So it's discussed why there's two flour offerings in the Torah that were from se'irim. Only two. Saita, the woman the husband accuses her, and the Eimer. So it says, why by, huh?
Not Shavu.
No, that was Shtei Alechem, was made from chametz.
That was chita, though?
Chita, but chametz. But, so it says, why does the Saita bring Sa'edim? Because she acted like a behemoth, you know, so your carbon should be a behemoth. So it says, why the Omer Michael behemoth? Why is the Omer Michael behemoth? Why is it not for something bad? So Chassidus and Kabbalah explain, because the whole purpose of Sfirah Sa'edim is to prepare the nefesh habahamis, the animal soul, the Yetzer Hara, to be able to prepare for the Torah. The nefesh olikiz, the Yetzer Tov, the godly soul, the neshama, is ready for Matan Torah. Who do we need to get ready for Matan Torah? The Yetzer Hara, the nefesh habahamis. So when you do the Meichel Behema, so basically what you're doing during the time of the Omer, and that's why it's from barley, because we're preparing ourselves, the Nefesh Abamis, to be able to reach the level. So it says like this, the Gemara, the Chassidus in Kabbalah explain, why does the Torah say Tisperu Chamishim Yaim? Because when a Jew counts 7 weeks, meaning every day they prepare themselves more and more and more and more and more, so after the 49 days, Tisperu Chamishim Yaim, Hashem gives you as a gift from above, the 50th level, which is Matan Torah. Matan Torah, according to the Chachamim, happened on the 50th day, according to Rabbi Yosi, it happened on the 51st day. But according to the Chachamim, Shavuos is the gift from above of Matan Torah. The gift from above. In broadening it, extrapolating it into the Yovel concept, just like you have the 7 weeks, is the preparation until... So in a certain respect, the Yovel level, it's brought down in Kabbalah, is connected to the Chamishim Sharibina, the number 50. So, in fact, that's why it's called Ad Olam. Olam refers to Yovel. Olam means for, Ad Olam means forever, because it's a level which is really above time. It's interesting, you know where we learn out Olam is Yovel, 50 years, we learn out from Shmuel HaNavi. When Shmuel HaNavi was born, so his mother nursed him for 2 years, and then she said to Elkanah, after he finished nursing him, which was a two, I'll bring him to the base of Migdash, v'yashav sham ad olam, and he's going to be there ad olam, forever. And Shmuel lived 52 years. 2 years he was with his mother, and 50 years he was in the base of Migdash. This is what the Gemara learned out. And the Torah calls it olam. So you see, olam, how do we know? It says in the Mishpatim by a slave that, you know, you drill his ear. V'avodei la'olam. How do you know la'olam is yevil? So the Gemara learns it out from Shmuel HaNavi that olam means yevil because he was 50 years in the Beis HaMikdash. So olam, 50 years, is a level of a revelation from godliness which is above all the 49 years together. The 49 years is what you're counting. And the 50 years is the gift from above. The complete revelation of Kedusha. So the Yovel year, conceptually, was a very holy year. But besides the fact that the Torah says the slaves go free, you blow shofar, and the land goes back, there's no other mitzvah directly connected to Yovel. Even Shemitah, the Torah doesn't say. Even Shabbos. What does the Torah say by Shabbos? Don't do work. The Gemara learns out, Vayakal Meisha, Meisha Rabbeinu gathered to learn Torah. You're supposed to learn Torah on Shabbos. But it's very clearly in Chumash, the Torah doesn't speak what to do on Shabbos, the Torah doesn't speak what to do on Yovel, what to do on Shemitah. It's up to the person to make the best of it. They make the best in all 49 levels, so then the 50th level is that high level. Okay, now Pasuk says like this. Yovel he shnat Pasuk Yud Aleph. Okay, so all the slaves go free back to the original owners, and the land goes free, and so on. Yovel he shnat hamishim shanati alachem. It's Yovel because it's, you know, the 50th year. Leis is rovel leis sixras ifichal leis sifras nizirel. You shouldn't plant. You cannot harvest. You even the pick what even what grows. You know, even the aftergrowth. You should not pick what you set aside for yourself. Okay, you can't. Again, you can't show only any ownership whatsoever during the Yovel year. Now, the Rashi brings down that because we free the slaves on Yom Kippur, right? They go free on Yom Kippur when you blow shofar. So somebody might think Yovel goes from Yom Kippur to Yom Kippur. Maybe that's the Yovel year. Yom Kippur to Yom Kippur. So it says, no. The whole year, it's Yovel he. It's only for the year of Yovel. It doesn't go to the next Yom Kippur. It goes from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, but for the first 10 days, everything stays as is. What?
In the next Rosh Hashanah?
It's not Yovel anymore.
What is this 10 days?
What's this 10 days? No, technically it's Yovel year. You can't plant, you can't work in the field. But the slaves don't go free and the houses don't go back until Yom Kippur. But Yovel begins from the year of Yovel. Not after it, but yeah.
Is the produce of Yovel the same kedusha as Shemitah, or is it a higher level? Or?
It's higher. We're going to see in the next pasuk. It says ki Yovel he, it's Yovel, kedush ti alochem, it should be holy. Okay. Now, from the field you can eat the crop. So Rashi says again from the Medrash that what does it mean it's holy? That if they're sold or redeemed, let's say you sinned, you worked Shemitah, okay? And now you sold the food, that food has the same din as Shemitah. The money has the same din as Shemitah. That is free money. Doesn't have the kodeshi, meaning that just like things that are sold in the Beis Hamikdash, if it's sold, the money becomes holy, right? If somebody had an object to the Beis Hamikdash, okay, this is the way Rashi explains it. When the Beis Hamikdash had objects, what did they do with the objects? Somebody consecrated a table to the Beis Hamikdash, okay? So if it was an animal that was kosher for a carbon, it was brought as a carbon. What happens is somebody donated money, somebody donated a table, somebody donated soda. So it becomes kodesh, it's hekdesh, right? the gizbod, the treasurer of the Beis Hamikdash, sold it. So then the object became no more holy, but the money became holy. Right? Anything of hekdesh sold, so it was an exchange. The object became unholy, but the money became holy. So he said, that's Rashi explained the same thing with Yovel. When things are sold during Yovel that are not supposed to be sold, so the money becomes holy. And that's the same thing of Shemitah. Okay. They be sent only for purpose that would be permitted for Jubilee and Shemitah produce. Okay? But he said, but unlike holy objects, that you redeem the objects, here both stay holy. The thing you sold and the money both stay holy, both stay the din of Shemitah. Kedusha Shemitah, even today, by the way, you know, when you bring a Sregan from Eretz Yisrael in the Shemitah year, okay, they retain Kedusha Shemitah, which means you can't sell it, you can't do produce officially, you're not selling the Esreg in the year. When you buy those who buy Israeli Sregan, when it comes Shemitah year, a fish that you don't buy the esrog, you buy the lulav. The esrog comes along for free because you can't do business in Shemitah. And then afterwards, the esrog cannot be thrown out. That's Kedusha Shvius. Officially, it's supposed to be returned to Eretz Yisrael, and you let it there until it rots, and then you throw it out. So there's a certain Kedusha of the Peder Shvius. So this, that's what the pasuk is. The Torah is saying that it becomes holy. It has Kedusha.
So
huh?
So how many years is now?
Now we're in the second year of Shemitah. Last year was Hakel.
Right.
2 years ago was Shemitah. Tavshin Samaches was Shemitah.
How big of a side
when Mashiach comes? He has bigger problems to figure out, I promise you. Huh? I promise you Mashiach has bigger headaches than when Yevil is going to be. Number one, Mashiach is going to have to solve who's Jewish. Okay? Then he's going to have to solve which tribe everybody belongs to. You know, starting with the Jews, what they're going to want. This guy's going to want to be this tribe, this guy's going to want to be, this guy's going to be a Levi, this guy's going to be a Kohen, this guy's going to want to be Binyamin. You know, he's going to have a lot of issues. This is the least, this is on the back burner. The land, divide the land.
Only the tribe is...
No, really. When Mashiach comes, obviously, if it's going to be things, it's going to be go. We're going to all go back to the old system.
So you're a mass lady, you're a lady, right?
Huh?
If you're a mass lady, you're a lady, right?
And what is your husband?
Israel.
So, what are your kids?
Israel.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
If your mom and dad both lady, you're not lady.
Then the kids are lady. Sorry to disappoint you. I have the same problem. Some of my kids married out to Yisraelim.
Yeah.
One married a Kohen at least.
Does Yerushalayim go back to the Kohanim?
Yerushalayim goes back to everybody. What didn't belong to the Kohanim? Yerusha Chubra lo Yachtav. It belonged to everybody.
Everybody? All the tribes?
Lahavdil Elif Abdullah. Like Washington, D.C. doesn't belong to any state, even though geographically it's in Virginia, whatever. So Maryland, Virginia, they're all fighting about that also. So Yerushalayim, it says in Tilim, it's a city that belongs to nobody. It belongs to all the, not belongs to nobody, it belongs to all the Shvatim. You know, stop for now, it's like, but it's something which is free for all. Does it belong to everybody or does it belong to nobody?
It depends.
Depends what?
I don't know.
No, it's halachish. It's a Rashi and Chumash.
That's why I wanted to.
It's a Rashi and Chumash. There's a Shaila when something is free for all. Does it belong to everybody? Does it belong to nobody?
Like international waters.
It belongs to everybody.
Yeah. Huh?
It belongs to everybody that wants.
Nobody.
If you do hefker, and Pesach, whatever you.
In other words, something is hefker, hypothetically. If you'd be the only person in the world, would everything automatically belong to you? Or what you acquire, you acquire. What's not, it's not. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Now that there's other people, so Hefker could be one of two things. Either to make it mine, or if it belongs to everybody, I acquire it to take off everybody else's ownership. There's two ways of looking at it. If something's free for all, and I acquire it, am I acquiring it to become mine, or am I acquiring it to remove everybody else's ownership over it? And the difference would be Adam Arishan. And Rashi says, beginning of Vayikra, Adam Kiyakriv, Rashi says, why does it say Adam? The teachers, just like Adam Arishan didn't steal. Shahakol hayashaloi. Rashi said, everything belonged to him. So same thing in Alta being a stolen carbon. What does Rashi say? Adam Arishan owned everything. That means, Rashi and Chumash at least learned, Hefker belongs to everybody. You don't even have to make a king. So Adam Rishon is the only Jew, automatically everything, a person, not Jew. Automatically everything belonged to him.